This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden and China President Xi Jinping are planning to speak Thursday. According to a U.S. official, their first conversation in 4 months coming amid new tensions between Washington and Beijing over China's claims on Taiwan. The planned talks between the two leaders, the fifth in a series of regular check-ins, have been in the works for weeks, but the possibility of a visit to Taiwan by the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the top congressional Democrat and second in line of succession to the presidency, has added fresh strain to the complicated relationship. Beijing is warning that it will take forceful measures should Pelosi visit the self-ruled island of Taiwan that China claims as part of its territory. The U.S. official declined to be identified ahead of the public announcement. The schedule was first reported by Bloomberg. U.S. President Joe Biden has improved enough from his coronavirus infection that he is able to resume his regular exercise routine. That is according to an update Tuesday from his doctor, Kevin O'Connor, wrote that Biden's symptoms have now almost completely resolved and all of his vital signs are good. Meeting virtually with South Korean business executives, President Biden says he is near the end of his COVID-19 isolation.
I'm feeling great. I hope it comes across that way as well. I hope I look as great as I feel here. But, you know, and you're well, you know what I mean. I hope that sounded awful, but I never looked that good. I hope I look as good as I usually do, which is not that good.
Biden took his fifth and final dose of Paxlovid, which is intended to prevent severe symptoms from COVID-19. This is VOA News. Trump, in Pence speeches, put the GOP's stark divide on display. We get more details from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
Former President Donald Trump and his former Vice President Mike Pence were both in Washington Tuesday in separate and starkly different appearances. Trump was back in the nation's capital for the first time since Inauguration Day 2021. While critical of the Biden administration, Trump also resurrected the 2020 election.
I always say I ran the first time and I won. Then I ran a second time and I did much better. We got millions and millions more votes.
At a separate event, Pence said it's time to move on.
I believe conservatives must focus on the future to win back America.
Polls show Trump remains by far the top choice among Republican primary voters, with Pence far behind. And Trump teased he may run again.
We may just have to do it again. We have to straighten out our problems.
Mike Gracia, Washington.
At least 15 people were killed and dozens of others injured during 2 days of demonstrations in Congo's east against the United Nations mission in the country. United Nations said one peacekeeper from Morocco and two international policemen from India serving with the UN peacekeeping force were slain, and a policeman from Egypt was injured at the UN base in North Kivu province when violent attackers snatched weapons from Congolese police and fired on UN personnel. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres strongly condemned the attack and violence targeting multiple UN bases across the North Kivu since Monday. UN Deputy Spokesperson Farhan Haq said. Haq said that on Tuesday, hundreds of assailants attacked bases on the UN force in Goma and other parts of North Kivu, fueled by hostile remarks and then threats made by individuals and groups against the UN, particularly on social media. The U.S. economy is caught in an awkward, painful place, a confusing one, too. Growth appears to be sputtering. Home sales are tumbling, and economists warn of potential recessions ahead. But consumers keep spending. Businesses keep posting profits, and the economy keeps adding hundreds of thousands of jobs each month. In the midst of all of this, prices have accelerated to four-decade highs, and the U.S. Federal Reserve is desperately trying to douse the inflation flames with other higher interest rates. That makes borrowing more expensive for household and businesses. Fed hopes to pull off the triple axle of central banking. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Wednesday, July 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinirofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the first ships to export Ukrainian grain from the Black Sea ports set to sail as Russia continues rocket attacks.
We expect the first ships may move within a few days. The Joint Coordination Center will be liaising with the shipping industry and publishing detailed procedures for ships in the very near future.
The WHO urges people at risk of monkeypox to get vaccinated against the disease as global concerns grow.
The World Health Organization says the disease has continued to spread around the world, with cases topping 16,000 in at least 75 countries.
And Pope Francis honors grandparents as the roots of humanity in his first big mass in Canada. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. A UN spokesman says the first ships to export Ukraine grain from the country's Black Sea ports may move within a few days under a deal agreed on Friday by Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, and the United Nations. Deputy UN spokesperson Farhan Haq said a joint coordination center will liaise with the shipping industry and will publish detailed procedures for ships in the near future.
The Secretary General noted that these products are desperately needed to address the global food crisis and ease the suffering of millions of people in need around the globe. Full implementation by the Russian Federation, Ukraine, and Turkey is imperative, he said. On the Black Sea Initiative, we can tell you that since the signing of the agreement, the parties to the initiative and the UN have been in frequent contact, including yesterday. All parties have reconfirmed their commitment to the initiative. The government of Turkey has generously provided a physical space for the Joint Coordination Center, where operations are being established now. By tomorrow, all parties and the UN will have a presence in the Joint Coordination Center in Istanbul. We expect that the first ships may move within a few days. The Joint Coordination Center will be liaising with the shipping industry and publishing detailed procedures for ships in the very near future. Under this agreement, under this initiative, all parties do things that are helpful for what the goal of the initiative is, which is, in other words, to enable the safe transportation by merchant ships of commercial foodstuffs and fertilizers. Those ships are traveling to three different Ukrainian ports in the Black Sea, one of which is Odessa, the other two being Chernomorsk and Yuzhny. And we want to make sure that all conditions are right for the safe travel of ships. Anything that's not commensurate with that is, of course, not helpful for the success. You have seen from the statement that we made, which condemned this attack, that we believe that it was not a helpful thing, and we want all sides, as the Secretary General made clear on Saturday, to fully implement what they have agreed to.
That's UN spokesperson Farhan Haq. Ukraine's military reported Russian missile strikes across cities of Ukraine Black Sea on Tuesday. The attacks hit multiple locations, including the Odessa area and port infrastructure in the city of Mykolaiv. Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller speaks with reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Unfortunately, for the past couple of days and over the last weekend as well, the south regions like Odessa and Mykolaiv were under quite an aggressive shelling and a lot of missile attacks. Those, you know, in line with Istanbul agreement that was signed, a so-called grain agreement. But we still see that fightings and attacks are happening in this region. What we know from today is that over the night, it was an attack on Odessa region and Mykolaiv region. In Odessa, the missile targeted private area with private buildings. In Mykolaiv region, the target was the port infrastructure. According to the military officials in the region, the missiles were hit from the aviation from the direction of the Black Sea. At least 9 missiles hit Mykolaiv region. We don't have final information regarding the casualties, but we know that there are quite a lot of damages of the critical infrastructure and civil infrastructure.
And Anna, while we have been discussing the attacks on Odessa, the attacks on Kherson, and the front lines in general, can you give us a little bit more context about where Mykolaiv fits in with all this?
Mykolaiv region in general is one of the closest areas in terms of the front line. And yesterday, Mykolaiv officials announced evacuation from some villages in this area because of a very high danger for the civilian residents. We know that these people were evacuated to Odessa region, and it looks like that evacuation will continue when it's possible. But we don't have confirmation that today any evacuation is happening. However, the head of Mykolaiv Mykolaiv region continue to announce that there is a danger of missile attacks, and actually missile attacks are happening every day and every night. And particularly very early in the morning, we receive confirmations and information in general about certain hits by the Russian missiles.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking from Kyiv with Flashpoint Ukraine's Steve Miller. The U.S. State Department on Tuesday said it was taken by surprise by Russia's announcement that it plans to pull out of the International Space Station. State Department spokesperson Ned Price told a regular news briefing that news was, quote, unfortunate development, unquote, given the critical scientific work performed at the ISS. Russia's new space chief on Tuesday signaled his country's intent to withdraw from the International Space Station after 2024. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
It's an unfortunate development given the critical scientific work performed at the ISS, the valuable professional collaboration our space agencies have had over the years, and especially in light of our renewed agreement on spaceflight cooperation. I understand that we were taken by surprise by the public statement that went out. I'm not aware that discussions on this front have started yet, but United States and Russia, we have cooperated on space exploration for years now, over the course of decades. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has obviously changed our relationship fundamentally, but there are still aspects of our relationship, including our joint pursuits in science, joint pursuits in safety, people-to-people ties that we would like to see preserved.
That's State Department spokesperson Ned Price. For the first time since he left office in January 2021, former U.S. President Donald Trump was back in Washington on Tuesday to deliver a speech to an institute that he focused on advancing the agenda of his one-term administration. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
In a 90-minute speech, mostly on the subject of public safety, former President Donald Trump repeated his false claim that he defeated Joe Biden in the presidential election in 2020.
I ran for president. I won. Then I won a second time, did much better the second time. Did a lot better.
Trump also defended his supporters who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, asserting some of the criminal defendants are being treated horribly. He also attacked the congressional committee investigating that event to halt the electoral vote count. Trump stopped short of announcing he will run again for president in 2024, but said if he does not, the country is doomed. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Tunisian President Kais Saied and his supporters are celebrating the apparent adoption of his controversial new constitution following a referendum Monday. But turnout for the vote was low and the opposition is disputing the results. Lisa Bryant reports from Tunis.
Tunisian President Kais Saied promised a new phase for his country as he met cheering supporters. He called the results of Monday's referendum an historic moment that offered lessons for the world. But President Saied's political opponents, who called on supporters to boycott the vote, see things differently. Samira Shawashi, president of the Heart of Tunisia party and vice president of Tunisia's now-dissolved parliament, questioned the turnout and numbers presented by Saied's appointed election commission. She said the opposition would do its own check. Either way, she said, the low voter turnout, whether out of opposition or indifference, stripped the draft charter of legitimacy. President Saied says his new constitution, designed to create a strong presidency, dilute legislative powers, and establish a new regional assembly, will end the political gridlock that has gripped Tunisia for years. The opposition fears it will consolidate his one-man rule that began a year ago when Saied seized far-reaching powers, dissolving government and firing dozens of judges. Tunis University professor Hamadi Radisi says the outcome threatens the country's fledgling democracy.
Probably this is not the end of the transition, but this is a big setback. Next, we have no idea.
Il est un bon président.
But voters like furniture salesman Adel Zine are happy with the results. Still, he believes President Saied can't rule on his own. He lacks experience. If he becomes a dictator, Zine adds, voters will kick him out. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Tunis.
In other news, Pope Francis has honored grandparents as the roots of humanity in his first big mass in Canada. Some 50,000 people filled Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, Alberta, to mark the Feast of St. Anne, She is the grandmother of Jesus and a figure of particular veneration for Canadian Catholics. The Mass took place a day after Francis made a historic apology for the church's participation in what he called a, quote, disastrous, unquote, policy. For decades, residential schools separated Indigenous children and their families and sought to assimilate them into mainstream society. Some have welcomed Francis's apologies, but the chairman of Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission said it did not go far enough. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Gina Dorfo in Washington. President Joe Biden continued Monday to recover from his bout with COVID-19. This as the U.S. faced a new health threat after the WHO chief declared monkeypox a public health emergency of international concern. Is the U.S. ready for a new viral outbreak? VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
Ready or not, here comes monkeypox. On Saturday, the head of the World Health Organization declared the virus, which is endemic to Central Africa and has infected more than 16,000 people in 75 countries, a public health emergency of international concern. Monkeypox arrived in the U.S. in mid-May, and there are now about 3,000 cases here. The health organization's previously declared emergencies were for the COVID-19 pandemic, the 2014 Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and the Zika virus that hit Latin America in 2016. The White House's top pandemic coordinator says the U.S. is ready. Dr. Ashish Jha, White House COVID-19 response coordinator.
We're going to continue working on increasing access to testing, vaccines, and treatments, and making sure that Americans understand what risks and challenges this virus faces and what the administration is doing to respond to it.
Symptoms resemble the flu, plus a rash that looks like pimples or blisters. But doctors say this is not a pandemic in the making. Unlike COVID-19, monkeypox is only spread through close contact and has a developed vaccine. The Biden administration says it hopes to have access to more than 6.9 million vaccine doses by mid-2023, and that health departments are offering more than 1.7 million courses of treatment for free. Dr. Jha said the administration is also looking to accelerate a global response, though he did not provide specifics in response to VOA's question.
We continue to have strong partnerships with multiple countries around building up laboratory capacity, that same testing capacity we're talking about here in the United States. It's really essential that other countries have that as well. We're continuing that work. This outbreak obviously now is in many, many other countries as well. And so we're in constant conversations with our European colleagues, with colleagues in other parts of the world. I think this public health emergency declaration will also further galvanize global response.
Doctors say it doesn't matter what this outbreak is called. What's imperative is that health systems stop this disease, which actually originates in rodents, not monkeys. Doctors have advised proactive global vaccination campaigns. So far, the bulk of American and European cases are among men who have sex with men, which has added stigma to the challenge of stopping the virus. Dr. Amesh Adalja is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security at the Bloomberg School of Public Health.
If the U.S. government wants to be serious about controlling monkeypox, they have to find a way to control it at the source. And that will require vaccinating individuals in endemic countries much more broadly than has been done in the past. And I think that's a legitimate action to take at this point.
But as the Biden administration knows, viruses are wily foes. Just last Thursday, coronavirus invaded a new host, the president. He said Monday that he's improving and has been working in isolation.
I'm feeling better every day. I still have this, a little bit of a sore throat and a little bit of a cough, but it's changing significantly. It's now up in the upper part of my throat. Actually, it's more around my nose than anywhere else. But they tell me that's par for the course. And I think I'm on my way to full, total recovery. God willing.
He added that he hopes to return to work in person by the end of the week. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
The World Health Organization is urging people who have been exposed or to and risk of monkeypox to get vaccinated against the disease as a preventive measure. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The WHO says the outbreak is mainly concentrated among men who have sex with men, especially those with multiple sexual partners. It warns against stigmatizing a whole group of people, as this could cause the outbreak to accelerate exponentially by driving the disease underground. The WHO technical leader on monkeypox, Rosamund Lewis, says the outbreak can be stopped with the right strategies in the right groups. She says mass vaccination is not required, but the WHO recommends vaccination for those who have been exposed or are at risk.
When someone is vaccinated, it takes several weeks for the immune response to be generated by the body. And so it's not something you can be vaccinated one day and be protected the next. You need to give it some time. So the folks we're recommending to be vaccinated right now are anyone who has exposure, a contact with someone who may have then been confirmed to have monkeypox. And so that could be family members. It could be other close contacts.
She says even children are not immune from getting the disease. She says between 80 and 90 cases of monkeypox in children have been reported in several countries, mostly in households where someone was infected. The monkeypox virus is spread from person to person through close bodily contact. It can cause a range of symptoms, including painful sores. Those at highest risk for the disease or complications include women who are pregnant, children, and people who are immunocompromised. European countries have the highest number of confirmed cases. Although monkeypox is endemic in Africa, where it has been present since 1970, the reported caseload is relatively low. For example, Nigeria reports 101 cases, and the Democratic Republic of Congo has confirmed 163 cases out of more than 2,000 suspected cases. Lewis says the number of suspected cases in the DRC is high because the country's ability to confirm cases through laboratory testing is limited. She says testing needs to be supported and ramped up.
Suspected cases may be other things. They may be even measles, they may be chickenpox. There's no vaccine for chickenpox being used in that environment. So it is critically important to support countries to access testing. That's one of the most important things that WHO is trying to do right now. But at the same time, in the global reports, what we're reporting are confirmed and probable cases.
For now, no travel-related monkeypox restrictions are in place. However, the WHO recommends anyone with signs or symptoms compatible with the monkeypox virus should avoid travel and isolate for the duration of the illness. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London!
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the Russian state-owned news agency TASS, Yuri Borisov, chief of Roscosmos, the country's space agency, said at a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin that Russia will leave the International Space Station project after 2024. It will then focus on creating its own national orbital station. The Roscosmos chief said in the TASS article that, quote, we will definitely fulfill all our obligations to our partners, but the decision to withdraw from this station after 2024 has been made, unquote. In a Washington Post article, Robin Gattens, NASA's director of the ISS, said that the space agency had not received any official word from Russia, but that, quote, we'll be talking more about their plan moving forward, unquote. NASA recently announced plans to extend the mission of the ISS until 2030. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis.
Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including reaction to former President Donald Trump's return to Washington, D.C. for his first major political and policy address since he left office. His appearance comes in light of new evidence from the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol attack. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Joe Biden has committed to curtailing the use of landmines worldwide. This policy change reflects the president's belief that these weapons have a disproportionate impact on civilians, including children, long after fighting has stopped. The new commitment will align U.S. landmine policy outside of the Korean Peninsula with the key requirements of the Ottawa Convention, the international treaty prohibiting the use, stockpiling, production, and transfer of anti-personnel landmines. The unique circumstances on the Korean Peninsula and the U.S. commitment to the defense of the Republic of Korea preclude the United States from changing anti-personnel landmine policy on the Korean Peninsula at this time. The United States will not develop, produce, or acquire anti-personnel landmines, nor export or transfer anti-personnel landmines, except when necessary for activities related to mine destruction or removal and for the purpose of destruction. The U.S. will not use anti-personnel landmines outside the Korean Peninsula, nor assist, encourage, or induce anyone outside the context of the Korean Peninsula to engage in activity that would be prohibited by the Ottawa Convention. The United States will seek to destroy anti-personnel landmines and their stockpiles not required for the defense of the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. will continue to pursue material and operational solutions that would allow the United States to accede to the Ottawa Convention while at the same time ensure the United States' ability to meet its alliance commitments. The United States' actions are in sharp contrast to Russia's actions in Ukraine, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Political Military Affairs Stan Brown. In Ukraine, there is compelling evidence that Russian forces are using explosive munitions, including landmines, in an irresponsible manner, which is causing extensive harm to civilians and damage to vital civilian infrastructure there. The United States is proud to lead the world in conventional weapons destruction. We've invested more than $4.2 billion in more than 100 countries since 1993 to promote international peace and security through our conventional weapons destruction programs, said Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary Brown. We'll continue this important work and remain committed to continuing partnerships to address the humanitarian impacts of anti-personnel landmines.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.